another turbulent week on Wall Street as the coronavirus spreads within the U.S.
It's extremely hard to get in front of those moves because you don't have that information advantage. So yes, this situation that the market is in right now, it could absolutely persist for, it depends on how bad the epidemic gets, really.
And the government steps up its efforts to track migrants crossing the border by collecting their DNA.
I mean, it's opening a new front, a new sort of civil rights privacy issue in immigration policy where there are several already.
It's Friday, March 6th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Market volatility continued today as the number of people who've contracted the coronavirus worldwide passed the 100,000 mark. The Dow dropped 256 points. The S&P fell by 51 points. That came despite the fact that employers added 273,000 new jobs in February, beating expectations. Economists are largely dismissing those gains as a less important economic indicator than usual, since most companies reported their headcounts before concerns escalated that the coronavirus epidemic would hit U.S. economic growth. We'll have more on the market's winners and losers from this week, coming up later in the show. A House committee investigating Boeing has found that engineering mistakes and a, quote, culture of concealment along with insufficient federal safety oversight led to two fatal crashes of the company's 737 MAX jets. The committee's report details how Boeing misled or withheld information from the FAA, so the agency would not require pilots switching from earlier 737 models to go through additional costly simulator training for the MAX. That was a promise Boeing had made to customers. Both crashes occurred after pilots failed to counteract a new automated flight control feature they hadn't been trained on. But the report also found that the FAA failed in its duty to identify key safety problems with the planes. The MAX jets have been grounded since last March. And investigators in the UK are looking into Barclays CEO Jess Staley's visits to an island property owned by convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. They're looking into whether Staley has been truthful about his connections to Epstein to determine whether he's fit to lead the bank. Prosecutors allege that Epstein trafficked hundreds of young women and girls, many onto the island. A Barclays spokesman tells the Wall Street Journal that Staley visited the island twice while he was the head of J.P. Morgan's private bank and was accompanied by his wife on both visits. Neither the bank nor Staley had previously acknowledged the visits publicly. Epstein pleaded guilty in 2008 to prostitution counts in Florida and was indicted in New York in 2019 on federal sex trafficking charges. He was found dead in his New York jail cell last summer. It's been a dizzying week on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrials rising or falling by 1,000 points several days this week as fears mount over the spread of coronavirus. So let's cut through the blizzard of numbers and find out who are the big winners and losers of the week on Wall Street. Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Vigna is here. So, Paul, aside from the chiropractors treating people because of the whiplash the market's putting them through, let's get to the money people. If your job is to handle trades, this was a very good week for you.
Right. It's not necessarily counterintuitive, but it's not the first thing you think about. Look, the business of Wall Street is moving money, moving capital. You have clients who want to put their money in A, B, C, D, whatever asset, and you facilitate that trade. When there are more of those trades, there's more of that business. So while this week was really hectic and really, you know, violent, really, the swings in the market, I mean, you could see it almost, especially on Tuesday, right, when the Fed cuts interest rates, you have the market moving hundreds of points within minutes of each other. I mean, it's just the moves are absolutely insane. But that's good business for Wall Street. So the trading desks actually had a really good week.
Now, they make money if the market goes up or down, right?
Yeah. I mean, they make money when they execute trades. You know, look, some of the discount brokers, we know they've all cut their commissions to zero. Mm-hmm. But in general, the idea is that you're making money per trade, essentially.
You also put day traders on your winners list.
It's almost just an extension of this idea. The people that love this kind of market, this kind of trading, are day traders, are active traders, are speculators, people who are playing the market. They're just looking to capture some of the volatility, capture some of the arbitrage, capture some of the moves. Then they don't they're not long-term investors. They're not thinking, I'm going to put my money in this and I'm going to sit on it for 5, 10, 15 years and just collect the dividends or the interest rate coupons or whatever. You know, they don't really care if the market's going up or down. They're just trying to trade that. They're trying to trade the movement. So when you have a lot of movement like this, mm-hmm. that's actually a bigger opportunity.
So buying a stock or shorting a stock, they're looking to score.
Yeah. And look, that's a very dangerous game.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, you have to really be in it for literally that. But if you're in it for literally that, this was a week for you.
And this week, the market was largely responding to the fears over the coronavirus spread. That seems like it's not going away. Cases continue to pop up in the U.S. These trading desks and day traders, men and women, could be on your list again next week.
Yes. I mean, I can't put them on the list every single week, right? I'm going to have to find somebody else next week who's a big winner. But yes, of course. I mean, this is the market right now. And what's really interesting to me about this is that, look, anyone who's ever seen the movie Wall Street knows that this, the big thing is that information is what's important, right? Mm-hmm. Having it, getting it first, having it ahead of somebody. That was the whole Gordon Gekko thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a situation like you have right now, nobody has the information advantage because nobody really knows what's coming next. So it creates a really, not only are the moves in the market violent, but it's extremely hard to get in front of those moves because you don't have that information advantage. So yes, this situation that the market is in right now, it could absolutely persist for, it depends on how bad the epidemic gets, really.
Now, leveraged loan investors did not have such a great week. They're on your losers list.
Right. And this is sort of interesting. We were trying to think about what were the ramifications of the Federal Reserve's interest rate cuts? Because the cuts were designed to bolster confidence, to provide liquidity for the marketplace, to soothe the jangled nerves. But there are ramifications of the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates. And one area that we looked at that got hit hard is this asset class called leverage loans. They're basically bond-like instruments. They're companies that can't issue investment-grade debt. They issue these leverage loans. Banks put these packages together. They sell them to sophisticated investors. Private equity funds use these leverage loans a lot in their deal-making activities. It almost becomes sort of like a funding currency in that market. And the interesting thing about them is that the coupon on them, the interest rate on them, is not fixed. So it's not like you're buying a 30-year fixed bond where the interest rate is whatever it is the day you buy it. The interest rate on these leveraged loans, it floats, and it is tied to interest rates.
So that lost 0.5% this week.
Exactly right. It's not tied directly to the Fed funds rate. It's really tied to something called LIBOR. But LIBOR moves in tandem a lot with the Fed funds rate. So when all the rates are coming down, it pulls down the coupons on these leveraged loans, which makes them less attractive to people who want to buy them because now they're less profitable for basically the same amount of risk. I mean, remember what I said. These are not investment grade companies. So you are buying something that is less profitable and you're still taking on as much risk. It's kind of a squeeze there, makes them less attractive. This week, we get you get weekly data on the fund flows in these markets. And this week, the market saw $2.3 billion worth of outflows, which was the highest level since, I think it was the end of 2018.
All right, winners and losers of the week. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Vigna. Paul, thanks a lot.
Yep, I'm happy to be here, JR.
The Trump administration has been ratcheting up its efforts to track migrants caught crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. Now, starting next month, immigration officials will begin collecting DNA samples from people entering the country. Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman joins us with more details. So, Michelle, how exactly is this program going to work?
So we don't know all of the operational details behind this. Typically a DNA sample is something like a cheek swab. But I think the bigger question is how immigration officers are going to have time to take samples from all of the people they encounter, more than 1,000. Right now, we're at about 1,200 to 1,300 people cross the border every day on average. And that's relatively low compared to what we've seen. And then we have about 40-some-odd thousand people, in ICE detention at any given moment. And the rule, the government is estimating that when they carry out this rule, which they're set to next month, they're going to have to collect something like 750,000 samples of DNA each year.
Now,
that's, to put that in perspective, the current FBI criminal database that has DNA in it, which is where they want to put this DNA, has about 3 to 4 million samples total.
And this is a very significant ramp up with regard to the government patrolling and managing the flow of people across the border, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, again, I think the Department of Homeland Security was actually a little resistant for some time to carry through with this plan because it's just operationally difficult. I mean, that's one of the reasons the Obama administration cited. You know, there's this 2005 law that authorizes the federal government to collect DNA samples. That law specifically said, you know, hey, Department of Homeland Security, if this is too cumbersome for you to do with immigrants, you don't have to. And the Obama administration exercised that power. Now, the Trump administration is saying that's a huge exemption. We really need to be collecting DNA from these people. And now the Trump administration is arguing, you know, some of these people go on to then commit crimes. And so that's why they need to do this.
So they're taking all the DNA samples from people crossing the border. This is very likely to raise privacy concerns.
Definitely. It's really, I mean, it's opening a new front, a new sort of civil rights privacy issue in immigration policy where there are several already.
Hasn't the Supreme Court come down pretty frequently on the side of privacy?
You know, privacy is an interesting question. As you said, it's a big new civil rights issue that we have to think about. The Supreme Court has recognized a pretty robust right to privacy in the United States, even for people who are non-citizens. But we actually already have this concept of privacy being relaxed at our borders, both at our land borders, at our airports. There's something called the border search exception, where if you are coming into the country, especially if you're a non-citizen, you sort of lose some of your rights. The federal government, you know, when that case came down, said you don't have the right to privacy when it comes to what's in your suitcase. We're going to search you. Obviously, now people don't just have suitcases. They have cell phones and things like that, and they have their DNA, which the government can keep on file for their lives and can also link them to family members. So I think it's a much more pervasive issue than the courts have had to anticipate when it comes to privacy of non-citizens.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman joining us from Washington. Michelle, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And finally, tens of millions of children worldwide have missed out on school because of the coronavirus epidemic. But authorities still aren't sure whether children are actually spreading the infection. Wall Street Journal reporter Sam Schechner.
Officials are still really trying to figure out whether or not these school closures have been effective. There's more evidence coming in from countries where there's been where there have been closures and the virus is spreading. But at least what, you know, is interesting is that in stark contrast to the flu, which does really spread in part through children and can be accelerated by schools, this virus does not seem to be behaving that way. Clusters of infections have turned up around large gatherings of adults, churches, old age homes, conventions. But according to the WHO, there haven't been any reported school-based outbreaks among children. In Singapore, for instance, which as of Thursday had reported 117 coronavirus confirmed infections, they've left the schools open there, and there haven't been any clusters or outbreaks that have emerged from them. So, you know, it definitely raises the question of whether or not this measure is worth the social cost.
Meanwhile, the coronavirus has meant a break from tradition for one healthy New York teenager, Joseph Hershkowitz. His bar mitzvah was scheduled for March 7th, but he's in quarantine at home. Instead of canceling the ceremony altogether, his family came up with a novel solution. They held a virtual bar mitzvah. Family and friends streamed the ceremony, and they wished JoJo Mazel Tov online. And that's what's news for this Friday afternoon. Hey, if you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.